This is an institution of learning, ladies and gentlemen.
Listen to students, listen to parents.
No, we're seniors. This is our year to slack off.
Okay.
Bueller.
Empower us.
The best anti-poverty program around is a world-class education.
This is the civil rights issue of our era.
Our week-long look at problems and potential solutions in public education here at The Takeaway couldn't have come at a better time. This week, the already dramatic confrontations between organized teachers and parents and communities who want better education for their kids seems ready to take a step up in voltage.
I can't wait. With 10,000 studies about how being poor affects education, I can tell you being poor sucks and my kid can't read.
It's from a new film out this week called Won't Back Down. It stars Maggie Gyllenhaal and Viola Davis as two heroic moms fighting for their kids' schools against an inflexible system.
There's a complete and utter lack of accountability for the job that we're supposed to be doing, which is producing results for kids.
Now, that's a clip from a two-year-old film, another movie about education, called Waiting for Superman. But that was a documentary telling a real-life story of Michelle Reade's mission to reform the public schools in Washington, D.C. Those were hard days in the D.C. schools, and Michelle Reade is today an advocate and consultant on educational reform, particularly calling for tough action to confront entrenched educational bureaucracies and teachers' unions when they block her vision of reforms. Her advocacy group, Students First, pushes for teachers to be evaluated and get pay increases based on student performance, for teacher tenure to be eliminated, and for parent trigger laws to let parents take over struggling public schools. And we're thrilled to have Michelle Reade here in the studio. She's been hosting screenings of the film Won't Back Down. Welcome to the program, Michelle.
Thanks so much for having me.
As an advocate and as a policy consultant, do you step into this sort of Hollywood realm a little hesitantly, or does it actually help you provide momentum for your cause?
I think it has the potential to really help, because not a whole lot of people pay attention to the intricacies of the education policy debates. And what this movie does is it gives a vehicle through which the average, everyday, normal parent or teacher or community member can watch the movie and say, okay, I get what the problems are. And I also see that there's a solution available, that we should be getting more involved in our children's schooling, and that there's the opportunity to improve it based on that.
Some reviewers have said, though, that parents are going to leave a movie like this and go to their own schools and say, well, the unionized teachers are the bad guys, the parents are the good guys, and, you know, the charter schools are the only solution. That's really the narrative that this movie suggests is the only possible outcome.
I totally disagree with that. I think the movie is very pro-teacher, first of all. The heroine of the movie is Viola Davis, who is a teacher who bands together with other teachers and parents in the school to turn the situation of a failing school around. I think it also portrays a broad spectrum of perspectives about the union. One of the main characters, who's the most effective teacher in the school, he, you know, talks about the fact that he's very pro-union because when he was in high school, his teacher, who was his mentor, was wronged by the system and the union helped save his job. And that's why he became a teacher. So I don't think it's anti-union, and I don't think it's anti-teacher. I think it shows what a community can do when they come together and they voice their opinions, that they can actually have an impact on a broken system.
Talking with Michelle Reade, former D.C. Chancellor of the D.C. Public Schools. Do you think in 2012 the union, the teachers' unions as they exist in major urban systems in the United States, have the capacity to be innovative drivers of reform, or have lost that capacity?
Well, I think that certainly unions are in a very tough spot, because on the one hand, their job is to protect the rights and privileges and pay of their members. That's what they've been doing for decades. They've done it very well. But I think that what we are seeing is a shift in the overall dynamics, is that, you know, the average parent out there is saying, well, we need policies in place that actually ensure that we're looking out for the best interests of children, not adults. And then you have a relatively new dynamic within the Democratic Party, which has traditionally been 100% with the unions, where Democratic politicians and parents are saying, you know, the old ties between the Democratic Party and the teachers' unions have to really shift and change. change, because if we are going to, as a party, ensure that we're putting education first, then there has to be a way that we can support unions, we can support collective bargaining, we can support teachers, but we still have to be able to challenge the teachers' unions on these policies that aren't good for kids.
And a lot of people have described you, Michelle Rhee, as part of that leadership group within the Democratic Party. Race to the top, Secretary Duncan, yourself, Michelle Rhee, former D.C. school chancellors, advocates of charter schools, are a part of a lot of social entrepreneurs, in fact, who
yes.
have put money into various systems. Say that you're something of a cabal within the Democratic Party that really is trying to unseat the teachers' union's strong association with the party and isolate them.
There's no grand plan around this. I think what it is a much more common sense approach.
But if they're in the way, that would be a smart plan, right?
Well, the bottom line is that the teachers' unions, they have to keep doing what they're doing, which is, again, representing the interests of their members. I think that the vast majority of Democrats out there understand that this country is not going to be able to regain its position in the global marketplace until we fix our public education system. And so they have to be willing to, again, challenge the teachers' unions on the things that are not working.
Let's play some of the criticism, or at least alternative view of some of the approach that you engaged in the D.C. schools. Here's educational policy advocate Diane Ravitz here speaking on CNN.
I think right now our kids are achieving at a higher rate than they have ever achieved, and that education is under assault. It's not because of the teachers or the principals. It's because there is a massive movement underway to privatize our schools. And this whole narrative about the failure of American schools is a phony narrative.
Now, she's saying there that essentially what is underway in America is a gigantic privatization scheme, and that to achieve that scheme, every effort will be made to say that the public schools are failing. Every conceivable metric that shows that the public schools are failing will be used to encourage this privatization strategy.
The whole privatization argument is absolutely ridiculous, and I think it is one that the defenders of the status quo use to try to scare the public. The bottom line is that what reformers want is for families, all families, to have options for their kids, high-quality school options, so that if there is a charter school organization in the neighborhood that's running a high-quality school, that we should allow parents to have the choice as to whether or not that is going to provide the best education for their kids. Why that equates to, in some people's minds, the desire to privatize makes absolutely no sense, particularly because charter schools are public schools run with public dollars.
And are you for the voucher system?
I am for vouchers for in certain circumstances. I'm for vouchers for low-income kids who would otherwise be trapped in failing schools. And I actually haven't always been for vouchers. As a Democrat, I used to be against vouchers. Where I changed my mind was when I went to D.C. and I saw that so many families in low-income communities were trapped in these failing schools. They had no other options. The traditional public school district could not provide spots for them at high-performing schools. And at that point, I thought, you know what? As a parent, if I was in that situation and somebody offered me a $7,500 voucher to potentially send my kid to a private or parochial school and get a great education, I would take it in a heartbeat. Any parent would. And so why should we limit certain kids from attaining a great education simply because we don't have good public options available in those communities?
Talking with former D.C. public school chancellor Michelle Rhee, we've got a response from an educator who's familiar with your experience down in D.C. and has this response.
I see more parents as an educator that don't take responsibility for helping their children at home than they do at school. More parent power frequently is not the solution. It's more parent responsibility.
What's the difference between parent power and parent responsibility, as he's saying it there?
Well, I think that one of the things that people have to realize is that we can't pick and choose how parents are going to get involved. You can't say, we want parent involvement only if you will bake brownies for the bake sale and cut out letters for the classroom and do X, Y, and Z. But when you're going to start holding us accountable for the results, then we don't want your involvement. You can't do that. If you want parents engaged and involved in their children's education, then you have to be ready for them to be holding the schools and teachers and principals accountable for the quality quality of education that they're providing our kids.
But is there a way through all of these we've just seen this very frustrating Chicago public school system strike. Is there a way for communities to move forward on education together as parents and teachers' unions and boards of ed and mayors of cities and, you know, tax policy that because there's a lot of people who support the schools who maybe don't have kids even in the schools. And that's a fiscal problem that we're having. It seems so much everybody against everybody else as opposed to a community consensus trying to improve an institution that's of mutual benefit for all.
Well, I'm of two minds. On the one hand, what I would say is that, if you look at any point across history, anywhere in the entire world, if you can show me someplace where you've seen really revolutionary transformational change without a lot of pushback, I would say, okay, show me what the route is. On the other hand, I think that there is a way that we could do it if we all made the commitment to put aside partisan politics, personal issues, and just focus on what was in the best interests of children. Because if you look again at this movie, Won't Back Down, that's about to come out. I mean, in many ways, the story is about an entire community coming together and trying to say, you know what, the school is not doing well by the kids right now, and we're not just going to sit around and blame people and point fingers. We're going to take some action, and we're going to try to turn it around together.
But of course, Hollywood always finds that story in the coming together during a crisis, which in the real world means you've already failed. I mean, yes, okay, if the school's on fire and, it's fallen off the edge completely, nobody graduates, maybe some kids die in the school because of some gang violence. That's a kind of a Hollywood beginning moment. But in the real world, if you let it get to that point in communities, you've already failed.
Well, I would totally agree with that. But unfortunately, we are in the place where really aggressive action typically does not take place until there's a burning platform, until there's just this undeniable situation that has to be addressed. I mean, if we look across the country, there are school district after school district that are just failing kids. I mean, kids in the single digits are operating at grade level for proficiency, and yet we're not doing anything. I think that every community has to come together, and that if we say, if we look at the fact that only 37% of fourth graders in this nation are on grade level in reading, according to the national examination, that should signal to us that we are in dire straits and that we have to take action now.
Very quickly before we go. Tenure has to go. Seniority has to go.
Well, again, all of those things are about the adults and the education
system. What do you
believe?
You're an adult.
Right. I mean, the education system simply cannot continue to operate to the benefit of adults. We have to be looking at how we're going to always ensure that we have the best quality teachers in front of kids, regardless of how long they've been in the classroom.
All right. Michelle Rhee, former chancellor of schools for Washington, D.C., founder and CEO of Students First, kicking off our week-long series on taking a look at solutions and problems in public education. Michelle, thanks so much.